Now, we are going to move on to a little problem that is coming down the track at us, and it has to do with the US tariffs. And I'm joined in studio by John Jordan, who's Chief Executive of Ornua, and Mary Sadler, who's CEO of Cool Swan, more of which I will get to after years of fretting about the possibility of tariffs from no-deal Brexit, particularly for suppliers in the agri-food sector. We all woke up on Wednesday to the news that the United States has only gone and jumped the queue by putting huge tariffs of their own on a whole list of European items, including a lot of alcohol and dairy products from Ireland. And the new rates are due to apply on the 18th of this month. And I'm now joined in studio by the two people aforementioned. Now, they're due to apply on the 18th of this month, and today is the 5th. John Jordan, if I may start with you, CEO of Ornua, best known to most people for Kerrygold butter, Mary Sadler, obviously, Cool Swan. When it comes to talking about selling into the US market, your product is kind of one of the legendary ones, really, isn't it? And I say that in a non-flattering way, just in a factual way.
Good morning, Marion. Yes, it is, absolutely, and thank you very much. Yeah, Kerrygold, I suppose, is very unique in Ireland. We're Ireland's first ever billion-euro food brand, and that stems primarily from the quality of the product that we start with, which is Irish milk. We've been fortunate, Ornua, that we sell Kerrygold in 110 countries around the world. And you're correct that we've been looking east at Brexit and the challenges that might present and looking how we mitigate those risks. And now we find ourselves as almost collateral damage in what is a civil aviation air dispute, really a dispute between Boeing and Airbus.
Yeah, like it is amazing that Kerrygold butter and indeed Cool Swan can end up in the middle of a row about airplanes.
Yeah, and really, look, this is a political row. So obviously, the Americans have accused Europe of subsidising.
Yeah, explain that to people. It's true, I gather, because the WTO found that it's true that the French, particularly, were breaking the rules to support their aviation industry.
Yeah, so the US have claimed and appealed to the World Trade Organization that European countries were subsidising and supporting the manufacture of Airbus airplanes. The WTO have ruled this last week and have found, as you said, that Europe have been breaking the rules. The outcome of
that, to the tune of 7.5 billion.
Yeah, the outcome of that is they're allowing the US to apply annual tariffs equivalent to $7.5 billion a year. The Americans, and it's not really, I think, a financial issue, the Americans now are trying to cause as much disruption as possible, and they can at will pick products and countries on which to apply those tariffs. So they've picked things like Scottish tweed, French wine, and they've picked butter, which unfortunately for Ireland, Ireland accounts for 90% of European butter exports to the US.
Say that again. 90% of exports into the US are Irish, of butter.
Correct. So if you take our Irish butter and our cheese, and cheese we're only about 5%, so really this is an issue about butter, but we're selling, Ireland are shipping about 40 containers. So if you think of those big 40-foot containers that go around on road and rail and on sea, about 40 containers a week. In butter terms, the vast majority of that is Kerrygold, and we're selling 3 million packets of Kerrygold in the US a week, and we've now just been hit with a 25% tariff.
25%. Currently, your competitor sells at $2.50, as I understand it, and you sell at $3.50. So people have to pay extra to buy Kerrygold.
Yeah.
If this happens, what will they have to pay?
So Ornua, as you said, we're the owners of the Kerrygold brand. And what we're trying to do all around the world is sell Kerrygold at a premium. And we do that because, and many of your listeners will understand that because they'll have been to the US. If you take a packet of Kerrygold butter and a packet of American butter is white, it's crumbly, it's hard to spread, and it hasn't got a great flavour.
Are you dissing a competition?
I'm bestowing the attributes of Kerrygold because it's yellow, it's creamy, it's smooth, and it has a great taste. And that's because, and many people don't know this, there are really only two countries in the world left where cows eat grass. And Ireland is one of those. And the white hard American
buffalo. Where's the other one?
New Zealand.
Right, yeah.
And a lot of cows eat grain. So the product has a very distinct difference. So we're about how do we capture and maximise that premium that ultimately ends up in farmers' paychecks. And in the US, you're correct, we sell for about $3.50. It's about a dollar more expensive for $2.50. This tariff at 25%, we'll have no choice now but go to retailers and say we need to put through a price increase. And it's probably going to add another dollar per pack, which will test consumers' will.
It sure will. Mm. That then you're going up to nearly 100% in the difference.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And that's a lot.
It is. And it's interesting, even in the last couple of days, if you look on social media, there's been an incredible response from consumers in the US tweeting, wondering about their Kerrygold, what it'll mean for them. They've been going to their retail stores and stockpiling locally in their fridge. So there's a huge affinity for it in the US, a market that I must say I love myself. I've worked out there for a few years. We went out with two kids, my two sons, and we came back with a third, Shamie. So we've a little bit of America at home all the time because of Kerrygold in the US.
Of course, yeah. And I'll come back to the history and development of it at the in a moment. But Mary, Cool Swan would not be as well known as Kerrygold. Tell me about it, how long you've been in operation and what it is.
So Cool Swan is the, I should say good morning.
Good morning
very
to
nice
you.
To meet you.
You're very
Thank
welcome
you very much
program.
For having us in. Cool Swan is a Irish kidney cure. It's we would say it's unique because of the ingredients we use. We're farmers up in County Meath and it's our own dairy cream is really what kicked the whole project off. And we wanted to do something a little different. So we added white Belgian chocolate and whiskey and we produced a liquid that fortunately is greater than the sum of its parts.
That part of the world is not where Bailey's came from as well.
Not strictly. It had a step-down facility. Baileyborough is where it was manufactured. Emmett's is actually the brand that came out of Cavan.
Right.
Bailey's has always had an association with Virginia. Virginia show and the cows.
They're
the best
all kind of local enough to one another. There must be something in the air up there. So tell me how you came about doing this. Your background isn't in food at all.
No. My background is in finance, but I married a farmer based up in Kent.
There you go.
And we knew we were sitting on a very good product. Exactly what John has said. Grass-fed cows produce the most extraordinary product. And the cream, which again goes into the butter that John is talking about, is really the secret behind Irish cream liqueurs. And like John, we are a specific product. We're Irish cream liqueurs. So we're 100% export into the US market, which is about a 1.5 million cases annual market for Irish cream liqueurs, which have to be made in Ireland to be classified as Irish cream liqueurs. So when we looked at what we had, which is cream, we decided cream liqueurs were probably the best route to go. And we decided we'd try to do something a little different. And that brought about the white chocolate. And then the addition of the whiskey. And we're sitting here today with a fabulous product.
How long did it take you to develop the product? Because you started in the middle of the recession, didn't you?
We did. It took the kind of production, the development part is 3 years, 200 days of raw tasting of alcohol and chocolate was very difficult. Very, very difficult. I had to lock them into the room. Lock them, keep them in there. It took 3 years. And then it's won every award under the sun for us. Every award. And then you have the difficulty of building a market, a route to market, your avenue, trying to get on a shop shelf.
Yeah.
And then you get hit by this.
So what did it mean for you?
Oh, it's material for us because...
Give me the percentages that you... of your business that will be governed by this.
Over 50% of our business
50%
is in the US. And this is the busiest time of the year for spirits generally and for Irish cream liqueurs. Spirits traditionally would sell from now till about Easter and then you switch to wine and ciders. It's not a given rule, but it's just generally how your volume goes.
Yeah.
So this is it. This is the holy grail of sales for us. So as John says a price increase.
Can you export a whole heap of them? Today's the 5th. It comes into force on the 18th.
No. We won't be out there. It takes 4 weeks to ship it by sea. You're the same, John.
We are. Again, this, in terms of creating maximum disruption, it's a very short lead time to the US imposing the tariffs. They could decide to postpone them. They could, it's at will in terms of what they wish to do, but they're being reasonably aggressive in terms of making it a short lead time, making it sharp on the 18th. And it will include everything that's on a ship from here. So unless it's actually in the US and cleared.
So the old rules were, if it had left harbour, so to speak, here, then that was it, and that was the tariff. But they're saying not so. It's when it lands.
It certainly appears at the moment that the ruling, the way they'll implement it is that unless it's landed, cleared and in the US as of the 18th of October, it will be liable to the duties, which is very penal.
It is very penal, yes. 25%. Yeah. And given the scale of the relationship and how it will affect the companies and those. Now, let me go back a little bit in history, because I associated Kerrygold with people like Tony O'Reilly and Joe McGough.
Indeed.
And I thought that was on board Bonya. And then I see that you have nothing to do with public ownership at all now.
Correct. So you're right, Marion. So Tony O'Reilly is the man who famously launched and developed the Kerrygold brand back in the 60s. So originally, Bord Bonya was established as the marketing arm for the Irish dairy industry. And in 1972, when Ireland joined the EU, it became separated from government and state. So it's a cooperative, nothing to do with state or semi-state.
So it's owned by the farmers?
It's owned by the dairy manufacturers in Ireland, who are in turn owned by farmers. So ultimately it's a farmer-owned cooperative. Since 1972, we changed our name from Bord Bonya to Irish Dairy Board at one point because of the internationalisation. And in 2015, with the abolition of milk quotas and the fantastic growth that has come in Irish milk output, we changed our name to Ornua, which is a slight amalgamation of
Ornua.
Well, it's a slight amalgamation of Or and Nua, as in New Gold and the post.
I bet you they're talking about little else in Cincinnati.
Well, in fairness, for many countries around the world, Irish Dairy Board had some connotations, whereas Ornua is now a business. And as I said, it's a farmer-owned cooperative, most famously known, as you did said in your introduction, for being the owners of the Kerrygold brand.
Yeah, and as I say, what a successful brand it was. Is and hopefully will continue to be. And to come back to the aeroplanes.
Yes.
It seems very unjust, but then life is very unjust, that we should get caught and snaggled up in the middle of a row between the United States and the EU, but largely France.
Yeah, it's certainly, as we're saying, look, we're collateral damage in this. And I think somewhere along the way, the Americans have forgotten that Ireland is a very large buyer of Boeing airplanes. So we're one of their big customers.
Yeah, remind people how so.
Yeah, obviously true, both Ryanair and Aer Lingus, but also we have a very substantial aircraft leasing business based out of Ireland. The top 10 companies in the world are based here. In counter, though, Marion, to the claim that Americans put into the WTO, the World Trade Organization, Europe put in a counterclaim on subsidies that the US were offering to Boeing. The unfortunate bit for all of us is that's a 6-month lag. So the World Trade Organization will result on that. There will be a result on that in April of next year, we expect. And it's likely to have tariffs of equivalence that Europe can apply
to
Americans.
What's the point in all that?
Correct. What's the point? And we would hope that at that point, Europe and the US would sit down and come to some reasonable agreement whereby businesses that are not related to this this dispute aren't damaged with unfair tariffs.
I presume they couldn't give two continentals.
I would think you're right.
I think, look, it's a political issue, I believe, Marion. And certainly from our perspective, you know, in Ireland, we're very fortunate. We have a Department of Agriculture, Food and Marine that are very engaged in the industry, Minister Creed and his team. I think we're hopeful, you know, certainly with Phil Hogan's new appointment as Trade Commissioner in Europe, we'll be lobbying there. And indeed, here in Ireland, we have a new US ambassador, Ambassador Crawford, who's only about 6 weeks or 8 weeks in the Phoenix Park, and clearly a man who's well-connected, because 4 weeks into his tenure here in Ireland, he had Mike Pence, the Vice President of the United States, visit. So certainly we'll be talking to all those bodies and people and looking for some support and seeing what can be done to remove
because
some of
those lobbying tariffs. Is huge. I mean, many of us would regard it as disgraceful, to tell you the truth, but lobbying is huge industry in the States.
It is, and it's an industry that takes time. So you'll find there are businesses and interest groups that will lobby, but it's a multi-year investment.
Yeah.
That's not the case here for Irish businesses, that in a few weeks' time we're facing tariffs in a very short and sharp impact. And lobbying in the government sense in the US will have little impact. What we're now asking is people who are in power, who are in place of positions of being able to influence that decision, to help us.
Right. Confident?
Certainly disappointed. We're certainly hopeful that the WTO ruling on Boeing will offer some leverage, but that's 6 months away. And certainly we'll be pushing hard with, as I said, Minister Creed, Phil Hogan, and indeed the ambassador to see if they can help us.
Okay, can you stay with me over the break? I have to take a break and go to the Angelus and that, and we'll be back with you after that. At first, we take the break. Now, a couple of calls were on saying, Marion, the Americans will pay anything for Kerrygold. They absolutely love it. Another says, last night in conversation with my friend Patricia in Mauritius, she said Kerrygold butter is number one. She stockpiles it when it arrives in her local store. This is all sweet music to your ears, I'm sure, John, but we have to convey it to Mr. Trump as well. Another says, I lived in the States for a couple of years. You'd pay the price for the Kerrygold regardless of what it was, as American butter is so bland. Well, now, hold on the bell a minute. I mean, if you go on the continent, you can have saltless butter and use it in a different way, and it's very, very good as well.
Certainly wouldn't criticise the competition, Marion. But interestingly, if you look at Germany, where butter is huge in consumption, Kerrygold is the number one brand in that market, and it's actually bigger than the number 2, 3, 4 and 5 combined. And again, that's down
well,
to...
Well, that's safe enough anyway.
Yeah, and that is indeed, thankfully. And that's down to the German understanding of what Ireland is and Irish agriculture.
And tell me, how will Brexit do it for you?
So look, Brexit is another challenge we're faced with. We've been certainly planning that for the last 3.5 years as best we can.
Are you stockpiling over there?
I don't like the word stockpiling because that means you've done something unique and special. What we do, cheddar is the big issue with the UK. So Ireland exports about 100,000 tonnes of cheddar.
It's a lot of cheddar.
It's a lot of cheddar. Indeed, it is a lot of cheddar. It's about 1,000 containers a week, give or take, going to the UK. And nobody consumes cheddar like the British. What we have done is take product that we've had in Ireland, would store normally in Ireland, just move it into the UK to be behind any potential barriers or tariffs that come up. The challenge for us is we've had to roll that on, you know, repeatedly month after month as they've been indecisive in the UK. One of the opportunities that might be there in the UK is they also export. So if we're locked out of the UK market, they will be locked in. And our new have identified markets where UK cheddar is exported, and we could potentially pick up those markets. So we've been getting used to Brexit. We've been planning for it, mitigating the risk as best as possible. But the US one has been a little bit more short term.
Right. Now, how about you, Mary? What can you do?
We just keep going. You know, you get
50% of your business.
Yeah. But we have a great product. We know we have the customers.
Do you think the consumer will pay more for it?
Yeah. I mean, is it completely price inelastic? No. So we will certainly lose some consumers. And the problem with this is if you've time to integrate it, you can tell your story as to why the price is going up. But it's that sudden price increase. And we work through distributors. We don't go in the US. We're not allowed to go direct to retailers. It's
but
just
you do.
Law.
Or no, it does. About 80% of our business is direct with retailers. Mm. And that's time. You know, we started there 20 years ago and it was mostly distributors, and now we're big enough to do it direct with the retailers.
Right, but you have to go to the distributors.
It's illegal. You have to.
Why is it illegal?
It's called the 3-tier system in the US when you're importing alcohol. Oh, there's many, many barriers to bringing alcohol into the US. So you have to go in through a distributor and then, or an importer first, then a distributor and then the retailer. But we as a non-American brand can never go direct to the retailer. We cannot sell to them. Ideally, you can't talk to them, so you put out your brand managers who talk to them. But we have to go through distributors. So a distributor can push through the price increase without telling the retailer why. And it's just a rotten time of the year for us. We've all our plans in place. We've our volumes committed. We've our spend committed, which is the hardest piece. And so if a price increase goes through and you don't match your volumes, then, you know, if you slip away, you just don't have that time. If we just had another 3 or 4 months, it'd make all the difference. It's just a 2-week window to try and get talking to your 5 states in the US.
This
really
may
tough.
Sound like a really stupid question because I can see it's glass. Do you sell online in any way?
We do. We have a very good online partner in the US. But again, you have to have the product in there.
All right.
To avoid. Now, can I sell online direct into the US? No, you're blocked. It has to go in through an importer distributor. So there's no way around it.
But if I want to buy something from the United States, I don't...
As long as it's not alcohol, there are specific categories.
All
so
right.
Alcohol is the
right.
is the issue in this case. You can buy clothes, and but alcohol would be... You have to go through your importer, distributor and
right.
then retail.
I see you had a board shake-up last year and you brought in somebody involved in colour trend paints.
That's right, we did. We were looking
with the idea to change the finances from red to black.
That's right. That's right. It's always a goal of a startup. Actually, we were just talking outside. One of the biggest commitments you have to make with food brands is you've got to taste it, particularly Irish-based dairy products. There is such an unbelievable difference in the taste.
Okay.
And it's a
listen,
different
you're
taste.
Not, you don't have to convince me.
Oh, great.
Right. You don't have to convince the audience. They know. Now, I want to come back to the more recent thing about the producer, the middle person and the end person in beef. And there was a perception that the farmer was getting pretty hard done by there. How does that differ in your neck of the woods?
Well, Marion, I certainly wouldn't claim to be an expert on beef. But when you look at that as an industry, one of the challenges for Ireland is we've 90% of our beef is exported. It's exported into global markets and at commodity prices. And the challenge for the beef sector is how do you add value? If you look at what we've done on the dairy side, that value is created through a brand like Kerrygold. And we're in 110 markets. We've 2,200 people working for Ornua around the world, flying the Irish flag. We've dozens of Irish graduates every year going around. And as Mary said, doing things like in-store tastings, having consumers taste the product. So people will associate flavour, taste,
right.
quality with the brand.
But
whereas,
come
on,
back
the, whereas
to
on the beef side, their challenge is if you go to a supermarket, you buy a steak or buy mince, it's not a brand, it's commoditised product.
Right. Now, since you're involved in the farming world,
yeah.
If you take what we will call the factories we're giving for the beef, where the farmer was producing it at a loss, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever, looking towards the future. But no, and I see they've set up another committee within the Department of Agriculture, and I don't mean to damn it before it starts, but I know they've had those before, and I was involved in one before. You're not going to be given the information by the retailers. You're not going to be given slack by the thing. So, I mean, why in a way are the beef people not in as good a position as the milk and dairy people are?
It's exactly as John says, it's down to product. So what's happening with the beef guys is they're leaving the product development to other people. So they're not doing it themselves. So we've taken our milk and put value added to it and going, trying to get to the customer. So the more layers you put in, so if you're just providing raw beef, you don't know where it's going. And there's layers and layers of people who take it on from there. And that'll be our problem in the US with Coos One. It'll go through a distributor who'll tell the retailer. I don't know what he'll tell the retailer about the price increase. I don't even know if he won't even try to pass on more of a price increase than my 25% tariff. And that happens and you can't stop it. So the kickback comes back then to us as suppliers. And the biggest problem you face as a supplier of a product is they'll always threaten you that they'll replace it with something else. Oh, that's okay. If you can't do it at that price, I'll get somebody else to do it.
Yeah.
And that's your biggest threat. So you're inclined to be, and they give you such short lead times. You have to make decisions on the hoof. And that's really, excuse the pun, that's really the problem.
Right.
But it is that there's, I don't know of any value-add farmers who are doing too much with beef, like curing it or, but it's, you know, if they're going to the craft butchers and could sell it directly, but you can't. Again, there's another line here, it must go through the factories. So, but it is, today I was just looking at the beef prices and they're lower than before the strike. So
tough.
Yeah, it
tough.
Is very tough. Yeah.
Do you think that I was just saying to you in the break with all of the stuff about Ryanair and Boeing and, you know, the aviation industry generally here, I was just saying Tony Ryan left his mark. Is there any way we can use that to our advantage?
Yeah, certainly. As I said earlier on, I'm not sure the Americans have realised how big a customer for Boeing that Ireland is. And certainly that's a leverage we should use, a lever we should use in our negotiations and discussions. There'd be some hope, Marion, that this is a political game that's going on here. And that means there's hopefully latitude in terms of getting products off the list or changing the time they're on it or changing the duty rates. Ultimately, the US are trying to create the maximum noise and maximum disruption. They want businesses like Ornua and like Cool Swan to talk to the governments and create noise within Europe, to the effect of then sitting down at a trade deal table. So we're hopeful that, given it's a political issue, there might be some latitude in that.
Right. Well, obviously, for everybody involved, we sincerely hope so. That's very short notice to get a, to get information like that. John Jordan, Chief Executive, Ornua, Mary Sadler, CEO of Cool Swan. Thank you both very, very much for coming in.
Thank you, Marianne.